Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson. And welcome back to everyone, whether a patron or not. If you are, though, of course, one of our patrons, this is an extended ad-free version of this week's show. And if you're not a patron but would like to get our ad-free and extended versions, listen and interact with us live and plenty more besides, do head to patreon.com/UKTech. The Queen's speech over Christmas failed to mention that it's a great way to start the new year. I just thought I would retroactively mention that I believe that's what the Queen was going to say. We don't have Mr. Ian Morris, my usual attractive, bearded, long-haired co-host with me this week, but we do have a fantastic silver medal in place of his bronze, which is Andy Hoyle from CNET.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm fine. I just upgraded you from bronze to silver medal.
I'm always going for gold.
But welcome back. Thank you to everyone who's been bearing with us. We had plenty of emails and tweets and things. Laura, I know in particular, one of our listeners did email in and asked if we're still doing the show. We basically, the reason that we have an extended break at summer and Christmas is because we want to and because we like to sleep more. And that's the truth. But we don't like to return until we know that we can sort of continue on our regular weekly cadence. If we'd have come back, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we'd have done one show and then not a show. And to be honest, we didn't think we were going to do a show this weekend, but we ended up being able to pull together Andy. He was already in one piece. What I mean is we pulled him onto the show so that he and I are together.
And we're gonna is you've woken me up from the sofa in order to do it.
That's right. Yes, that's right. I'd just like to thank some of our new patrons who have joined us or upgraded since we were last on air. Billy and Isad and Adam have either edited their pledges upwards or joined us for the first time. So thank you ever so much, because all three of you are now able to receive the extended version of our show, which is fab. And if you're having any problems getting hold of the exclusive RSS feed that you have for that, then obviously do send us a note. hello@techpodcast.uk. That is more introductory rambling than I ever like to allow on this show. So should we jump headfirst into some beautiful news, Andy?
Absolutely.
Okay, let's start with the fact that 16 social media stars, this includes Ellie Goulding, heard of her, Rita Ora, heard of her, models Rosie Huntington-Whiteley, heard of her, didn't know she was a model, Alexa Chung, Dunno, and Zoella, who I have heard of. They all agreed to change how they post online, the BBC wrote this week. This refers specifically to branding and advertisements. They are going to have to clearly state if they have been paid or received any gifts or loans of products they endorse, and follows warnings from the Competition and Markets Authority here in the UK that their posts could break consumer law. Now, the BBC said that the CMA has not made a finding on whether the influencers named did breach consumer law, but said all of them volunteered to change their practices following an investigation. And apparently, warning letters had been sent as well to a number of other unidentified celebrities, urging them to review their social media posts. Again, that's according to the BBC. Now, this story stood out to me this week for a very different reason to perhaps why the BBC picked up on it. And that's because it's been presented in the media as these high-profile celebrities and influencers have essentially agreed to obey the law. And that is in itself apparently newsworthy. And that being newsworthy is what I think is newsworthy to us. This just strikes me, Andy, as something that these people should have been doing anyway. And if you're being paid to promote something and it is against the law to not do so, agreeing to do it is like saying, OK, well, I'll agree not to rob a bank today. Or am I missing something
here? I thought this was already the law, because I know that it is on YouTube, and particularly because I watch quite a lot of photographers on with their YouTube channels, and it's always the case that if they are using an item or talking about an item that they have had sent in for free, or that they've been paid to say. Like, they do always outline that very clearly, and I don't know of anyone that doesn't do that, particularly when they've built up a big audience and they know that they could have their entire channel shut down if they get caught doing this. So I really thought this was already very much set in stone.
Well, it's there is consumer law that exists that says that this sort of thing has to be disclosed, and platforms like Instagram do actually have, I think, like settings for people with very large followings or who engage in this kind of paid posting in order to display this. But not everybody follows those rules, and this is essentially a lot of people being told you might be in breach of the law. They said, okay, we'll change our practices. But I just sort of, you know, it just feels a little bit strange. And maybe the whole reason all of this exists is because it's a reminder to people, because not everybody's a celebrity, but a lot of people do have large followings who could get into trouble perhaps for promoting something they're paid to say and don't disclose it. And this all just serves as a giant reminder that that's not okay. It really stuck out to me that essentially the way that this story had been reported, at least in Britain, was, isn't it great how these celebrities have agreed to do what the law says they had to do anyway?
Yeah, it's bonkers. If that is already the case, that they should have been doing that, which I believe it is, then yes, like this is not anything good. This is people patting themselves on the back for just doing what they should already be doing, and trying to get some positive PR out of it when they actually don't deserve any.
Now, the interesting distinction here is that just earlier on, you did mention that people need to disclose when they're sent things in for free and or if they're paid. And I think there's a difference sometimes. And you and I can approach this, as journalists, because we will get sent products to write about. But the difference is they're not our products. They get sent back and we're not told what to say about them. Whereas the difference...
Yeah, the latter point being the important one there.
I don't think they're all important, but I know what you mean. Well, yes, we're not saying what somebody wants us to say.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they're not being sent in saying we want you to focus on this and this and this. Like, they are being sent in for a full review, and it may be that product they sent in, hoping for 5 stars, actually gets 1 star and gets a slating. That's the whole principle of reviews journalism, really.
Yeah, I mean, I actually remember one particular review I did probably over 10 years ago at this point that got 1 star back when we actually did it out of 10. This is when I was working at CNET. That was so scathing. Yeah, I had to go through a lawyer before we published it. but yeah, they weren't particularly happy about that. But anyway, that's the difference. And I still think that there is a clear distinction that has to be made between receiving a product in order to produce content about it. Because that's not just in the world of journalism. That is also in the world of influencers and people who just have high trafficking YouTube channels. You know, you should feel comfortable in a company saying, we would like you to write about this, sending you one in to use for a while and letting you write about it. That should be okay. And I don't necessarily think it is as essential to disclose that, because that's just the way a lot of that industry works. The key thing is to disclose when you're being paid for it, or you're being paid what to say, or you're being given it as a gift and you're keeping it. Like, they're different things. And I don't know, maybe this story this week around social media just serves to remind everyone that this is the way it should be, and remind kids that, and I say kids because I think kids have grown up in a world where social media is the norm, whereas when I was a kid there was no social media, and so the barriers between paid and non-paid and commercial and editorial and things, that the lines there are blurred, and maybe this helps remind some of the younger people that these celebrities will do this, and you know, for what it's worth, I think it's okay for them to do that, but they have to make it clear, and I don't think we should be giving them a medal for obeying, saying they're going to obey the law. But anyway, any thoughts you have on this, of course, if you think we've missed something on this topic, do let us know. hello@techpodcast.uk. I do sort of feel like I'm missing a key aspect of this story. I just don't know what it is, so maybe somebody listening would like to let us know. Well, the messaging service WhatsApp, Andy, has announced that it's lowering the forwarding limit of messages worldwide from 20 people or groups to 5, Engadget and many others wrote this week. The update applies the limit from January 21st, so in fact that has gone out already for Android users and will reach iOS at a supposedly later date. WhatsApp said on its blog that it's an attempt to fight fake and misleading information from going viral on its platform. And specifically, it said, quote, "This will continue help keep WhatsApp focused on private messaging with close contacts." Now, the company actually tested this in India last summer, also to 5 recipients or groups, as rumors and fake videos in particular spread pretty rapidly, actually, on the platform It's actually quite sad and worrying that it was subsequently linked to a lot of violence in the country, including lynchings, which is one of the reasons, I think, why this was tested out in India initially. And WhatsApp said that it had made a difference in reducing forwarding of messages in the country. And so now it's being rolled out worldwide. But putting this into a wider context, WhatsApp, of course, is owned by Facebook, and Facebook's been the subject of a lot of scrutiny over its role in the spread of fake news and disinformation and misinformation as well over the past year in particular, and is under investigation in a bunch of countries for things connected to that. So this is all part and parcel of Facebook and WhatsApp trying to say, we acknowledge that our platforms are being used for things like this, and this is an effort to stop that. However, and this is where we're going to start, Andy, my question is forwarding or limiting forwarding itself enough, or is there an opportunity here to actually be a little cleverer with this and actually creating a hash of a message and maybe flagging that exact same text, for example, if it's been copy and pasted, if somebody else tries to follow it, and actually getting ahead of something going viral rather than just trying to say you'll have to copy and paste this and paste it into many other groups if you want to push it forward. Do you think that's an option here, or do you think this is enough?
I don't think this is enough, but I think the thing that is that I find most interesting about this is that I didn't realize that WhatsApp was such a big problem in this stuff in terms of forwarding to huge groups and other people. Like they say they want it to be about private messaging with close contacts. That for me is what I thought WhatsApp was. I mean, if we're having this conversation about Twitter, like you can't retweet more than 5 tweets about the same topic or something, then I'd feel very differently. But I agree with you. I don't think this is enough. People can, if they wanted to, copy and paste the message. I don't know how you would fight that in that case, because if you were then, as you say, either limiting other keywords, for example, then you could also be limiting the exchange of actually important information that could be helpful. And similarly, pinging an ID or a hash may again block out real information.
And I'm not in favor of platform owners being responsible for outright censorship in this way, but at the same time, like, there's a middle ground and they have a responsibility, and maybe this is enough. You know, if it stops that sort of trigger happy forwarding activity that we see on all social media platforms, really. I mean, if you think about the ease of which it is, the ease you have to like something or share something, it's faster to reshare something than it is to even load some of these stories in the first place. You know, you can retweet something without reading the story. People often comment on stuff and reshare stuff based on headlines alone. They're not reading the sources and they don't have time. If this helps prevent some of that, I'm all for it. I just wonder, where do you go from here? You know, if WhatsApp, as you rightly contrast against Twitter, is supposed to be for friends and close friends and relatives and businesses, I suppose, which is part of their long-term strategy.
But there's no public facing element of WhatsApp, is there? In terms of, like, you still have to be messaging with people you have connected with. There's no, you know, you can't search for trends and see messages.
No, you can't. And, but you can send to complete strangers. You know, you can send to people who aren't in your contacts list. So it is possible. Because a lot of news services have this set up where they have large groups that, you know, they will send messages out to with news headlines and things like that. There's also, there's another story quite recently around the use of WhatsApp for the sharing of child sexual abuse imagery, and that WhatsApp has become a particular place where that's being done because of the nature of encryption and the fact that it is quite private. So maybe this is something that could help in that context as well. It's not just about spreading hate or stopping the spreading of hate or disinformation. It could be used for other things, but I have a few misgivings. One of the questions that the chat rooms raised, Luke, in fact, says that hashing the message will break the point-to-point encryption, which is true. And his point is to my comment about if you were able to create a hash or like a unique identifier for a message, then other users around the world wouldn't necessarily be able to just copy and paste it because it would be seen by the server as a repetition of that same message. It wouldn't work if it was encrypted because you wouldn't know what that was, but it could be done locally. So if you were trying to copy and paste the same text into 1,000 different threads, that would still be possible because that's done locally on your device. So rather than being server-side, which perhaps could be a way of doing it. I mean, I don't know.
I'd like to see more care from media organizations themselves in terms of how they are using social media. Because I remember it was, I think, last year when there was a believed to be a riot starting somewhere in Oxford Circus or maybe on the underground of Oxford Circus. But and Twitter was suddenly aflame with all this, here's what's happening. And it was largely down to a particular media company had basically retweeted someone's tweet about an incident happening, which hadn't happened, but because it had been retweeted as breaking news, more and more people chimed in. It became a trending topic. People were avoiding Oxford Circus. The police were then tweeting saying, we're responding to this. And actually it was the things that had happened were considerably less bad than it ever was.
You're used to hearing the smooth, velvet sound of Nate's voice drizzled over your ears like a warm eardrum syrup, topped off with the freshly squeezed citrus tang of an Ian Morris opinion. Supporters of the show at patreon.com/UKTech enjoy second helpings every week. So pull up a chair, find your nearest spoon, and tuck into a sumptuous extra helping with no commitment. If you have any allergies, please inform a waiter.
Families living near airports, Andy, whose children fly their toy helicopters or planes in their gardens could be fined up to £2,500 under new government plans. This is according to a write-up on the Register this week. And it's the result of a small but significant plan to change current law. And this is what it is. At present, as the Register says, operators of drones that weigh less than 7 kilograms are banned from flying within 1 kilometre or a 1 kilometre radius of a licensed aerodrome, which is like Heathrow or Gatwick or something. But there's new Department for Transport plans would make it illegal for any drone within 4.5 kilometres without air traffic control permission. But people flying drones that weighed less than 250 grams, so that's like a quarter of a bag of sugar, would have been exempt. But that is what's been changed last Friday, I believe, and been deleted from the protection. So the moral of the story is, of course, as ever, don't fly drones and helicopters, toy helicopters, if you live near an airport. But now there is even potentially tighter legal frameworks being proposed that would actually make that financially rather catastrophic if you let little Jimmy out or little Janie out with her toy helicopter and flying it into a 737. Smart, Andy?
Yeah, I think so, actually. This seems quite harsh, but we've seen so many problems with drones being flown around airports because people just aren't using them sensibly. And that's a problem that's only going to get worse as more and more drones are available. They are smaller, they're more affordable. You know, they are children's toys, but children's toys that are capable of flying a kilometre away and up in the air to actually get in the way of aircraft. It seems maybe a little backward. It's almost like back in the day when people would have model aircraft, they'd have to actually go to an airfield in order to fly them with a model aircraft club. But it's largely down to the needing an actual runway to take these to take off. But it was like, it's a safe space that was set aside in order for this activity to take place. And I know that's kind of not the point of drones. It's that you can use the camera to have a look at your house or a nice beautiful area or something like that. But there are too many problems with drones in airports, and frankly, I don't know what can be done about this.
Well, this is essentially what can be done, and this is coming on the heels, if you remember, of in December we had the problems where about 140,000 people at Gatwick were affected because of drone sightings in the area. There's about 1,000 flights that were cancelled, and Gatwick spent several million pounds on upgrades to its facilities, if you like, to try and prevent it. And then it happened, a similar thing threatened to happen again in January at Heathrow, where departures were temporarily stopped there at the beginning of this month because a drone was reported to have been sighted. So you're right, this is only going to get worse. But I don't know, I'm slightly stumped on this, and the reason is because I just think it should be obvious that if you live near an airport, you shouldn't be flying a drone.
Yeah, but things that doesn't work with people. I mean, some drones, like, I think most of the DJI drones, as far as I knew anyway, they have intelligence systems built in that won't let you fly them that close to an airport. It's like that's actually part of the software. I mean, I'm sure it's probably fairly easy to override that if you want to.
It's not easy, but you can do it.
Yeah, but I'm sure the people who, the average consumer, which the everyday guy in the street, which is the worry that the airports have, because it is those people who think, oh, let's fly it over the airport. I've just got this new toy for Christmas. Let's go and take it out. So I don't know. I don't know how else this can be tackled, because if automated services don't really work, they've tried. They've discussed all kinds of like drone takedown measures around airports. But then as well, it's not just airports. There are a lot of air bases around the UK as well. And there are a lot of them that, will be marked on like air traffic control maps. But then, so will they start to count towards, it within this 4 kilometre area of where you can't fly? Or is it, major international commercial airports that that is the only focus? Because if you're talking about all airfields, there's so many in Britain that really 4 kilometres, you're going to find a surprisingly few amount of places in the UK where you can actually legally and safely fly your drone.
The Goyt Valley in Derbyshire.
Probably.
I think that'd be okay.
Yeah.
I think that'd be fine.
Yeah, but like most of Lincolnshire, you probably can't fly a drone. If that was the case,
one of the things I wanted to raise is down the line we're going to have a lot more flying vehicles, because cars, things from Amazon, delivery companies, everyone is experimenting with some form of driverless autonomous aerial vehicle in some way, and so we're probably only just at the very beginning of, I would say, some of the problems that these otherwise very useful technologies are going to have. And perhaps if this is a way of sort of having legislators and MPs and leaders kind of getting their head around this new technology, maybe down the line when we actually get towards more practical systems like deliveries of blood in a car crash incident that are currently taken on the back of a motorcycle, or if you desperately need some cookies to be delivered from Lidl and you just cannot be bothered to get on the train to Stratford, so you have somebody drone them over to you. If we can legislate in a way that makes that possible faster and safer by getting some of this stuff out of the way now in the way that we're talking about, then I suppose I'm for that. Actually, I just think
Lidl cookies that good.
Lidl cookies, Andy, are the best chocolate chip cookies you can buy in England.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast. If you have an opinion, simply find the nearest pigeon and sellotape your thoughts to it before encouraging it to fly to our studio. Alternatively, send us an email using hello@techpodcast.uk. Please note, pigeons will not be returned.
Well, that's going to do it for this week. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you to the chat room for showing up with quite literally just a few moments' notice when we decided we could do a show today. If you're one of our patrons supporting us every week, thank you so much. If you're not, you can head to patreon.com/UK Tech and you get access to our entire back catalogue as well. So you can check out what you're missing. And if you're one of our newest signups, don't forget to make sure you get your exclusive RSS feed and you get our ad-free versions. Andy, thank you for joining on the drop of a hat.
Thank you for having me, as always.
What have you been working on recently that people should know about?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Thank you.
There's not a lot that's publishing soon, actually. I've been working on various magazine features, but they're all quite long lead. So best just to keep your eye with @BatteryHQ on Instagram and Twitter, just to see either my photos or other things I've been up to, respectively.
Great. And are you bringing the CNET podcast, CNET UK podcast back anytime soon?
Yes, we will be bringing that back. Again, same as you, we want to bring it back at a point when we can commit to it being a weekly show. And that hasn't quite happened as we've all been away.
That's fair enough. Well, look out for that then. Good to know that's coming back. And as he says, @BatteryHQ on Instagram and Twitter for all of Andy's photography and consumer tech insights. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And we'll see you, all being well, next week.
You've been listening to Text Message with your host, Nate Langson. If you get value from the show, please consider joining our many supporters on Patreon. You can get access to a version of the show every week with no ads and as much as 40% more discussion every time. There's no obligation, so why not try a month by going to patreon.com/UK Tech or looking for the link in this episode's description.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.